The chair having been usurped in a bloodless coup, I will call the State Government Finance Division to order. What we have on the agenda today is a presentation from the Office of Enterprise Technology. Mr. Khanna, if you're ready to proceed, we will do that. The chair will be returning shortly, but we want to make sure you have time to get through your presentation.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Gopal Khanna. I'm State CIO. I have here with me two of my colleagues and associates. To my right is John Lally, Director of Planning and Portfolio Management. And to my left, Chris Busey, our State Chief Information Officer. I've invited them to join me because bulk of our conversation is going to be pertaining to the entire portfolio and all the initiatives and security. Having said that, I just want to draw your attention, Mr. Chairman and members, to our last visit several weeks ago when you had invited me to come and talk about Office of Enterprise Technology, what we've done so far and how we're positioning ourselves to meet the challenges that put forth by the 2005 legislative initiative, which the statute which triggered the Office of Enterprise Technology. The bottom line, Mr. Chairman, is that information technology today supports literally all government services that we deliver, whether it be education, healthcare, public safety, human services. In every aspect, technology is the backbone that delivers the services to our citizens. What we have been doing is looking at the statute and saying how we can take the vision as put forth in the statute and take the governor's vision and create better government. Technology becomes an integral part of delivering that. And the challenge before us is not only to move from 9 to 5 operating environment and government services to a 24/7 delivery mechanism, but also to become more outcomes oriented, as this model depicts. What we are looking to achieve is build a technology framework, a framework that will deliver government services 24/7. To achieve that, we really have a huge task ahead of us. We know going in that security is a major concern. We talked about it when we met last time. So what we need to build is a security framework throughout the enterprise so that we can better deliver our services to the citizens, not just to the citizens, but also enable government-to-business transactions as well as government-to-government transactions. That also requires building a framework of electronic delivery of services, whether it be e-licensing or other solutions that citizens can access by coming into one stop and being able to access the information they're looking for. At the heart of the matter is that we have to enable the functioning of the agencies, whatever the agency mission may be, whether it be education, healthcare, human services, public safety. We need to make that capability happen for them. Consolidation is an integral part of this delivery model and making a technology infrastructure that functions 24/7 is secure and is a secure framework for the enterprise. With all of that in context, the state needs five major things that must happen. First is emphasis on security. We are in a catch-up game. We have been and we continue to be. It's a threat that really is rather substantial, and we need to take that very seriously. We need to move aggressively towards moving and taking advantage of consolidation and aggregation so that we can deliver services better. Madam Chair. We need to focus on building capabilities like e-licensing, whereby we can allow citizens to access information directly online. And we need to build and make stronger our ability to manage information across the enterprise. That is one of the focuses of the statute, to focus on better leveraging and our investments that we make in information technology. And finally, we need to focus on supporting our small agencies. The reason being that the weakest link in security, in managing security, is being focused on what the weakest link might be. And our small agencies basically create a lot of potential exposure, so we need to help and support them as well. The governor's initiatives are categorized in five areas, and here are the five components of our budget initiatives. First one being security, $17 million is what we are requesting. And we need $11.5 million to build the capability so that we can make the consolidation happen. For the enterprise, we need $15 million for deploying an e-licensing solution. We'll talk more about that in a moment. We need $1.3 million for building our information management capabilities, and $2.4 million to support the small agencies. And we also have a small request for $126,000 for compensation adjustments. I'm going to ask my colleague here, John Lally, to walk through the next 25 slides, which give you some detail about each of these initiatives, and talk in detail, and then we'll open the floor for questions.
Madam Chair and members, my name is John Lally. I'm Planning Director for the Office of Enterprise Technology. And two things I'd like to note. First of all, $47 million is a lot of money, no matter what your standard is. And we want to try to reinforce with you the concept that this is enterprise money, not just OET money. Much of what you see and will see in the next few minutes relates to the capabilities and properties of IT across state government. The second piece of it that I think is also important to remember is that we've attempted to integrate into our budget requests much of what appears in the state's IT master planning process. This is a strategic document looking over what the needs of the state and its people are over many, many years. As I go through each one of these, and I promise you 25 slides will go fairly quickly, we'll try to run through them as quickly as we can, give you as much time as possible. But within those initiatives, we'll try to give you a sense not only for why we need the money, but also what we're going to deliver for that money, and then we'll stand for any questions you might have. The first priority for the Office of Enterprise Technology is information security. This is a critical issue for us and for the state government as a whole, and it's not just around protecting private data. You all know some of the things that are happening in the internet world. They are happening in state government as well, and protecting citizen data from corruption or theft is a very important priority for us. But it's also about protecting the investment we have in information and systems, because much of what is happening in state government is dependent upon technology. Information is our raw material, it's our resource, it is our product, and in many cases it is our process. And if that information is made unavailable because somebody takes down our systems or corrupts them, it has profound effects across state and local government and all of the citizens of Minnesota that are dependent upon that interaction with us. So this is extremely important, and it is an area that the state is significantly deficient in, and we'll talk about that for a moment. In today's environment, the threats that are arising are increasingly serious and increasingly numerous. It used to be that damage to systems was largely done either by some teenage hacker sitting at home and sticking it to government and to big business by showing how they could bypass security for the fun of it. Or it was by a disgruntled employee trying to get even with his employer. That's no longer the case. The primary threat now to our information security and to the integrity of our information comes from organized crime. Internationally, it is increasing at a very significant rate, and these are extremely sophisticated people. They are not fools and people that are just randomly doing it. This is a challenge for us to try to keep ahead of, and in some cases try to even keep up with, these threats to our information and our systems. The security threats that have been identified by CERT, which is the Computer Emergency Response Team for the country, have identified a 35% increase in intrusion attempts and in compromises of security. The graph you see shows a steady and increasingly severe incidence of those kinds of vulnerabilities. I will point out, since you're obviously going to be wondering why, there's a slight drop from 2001 to 2003 in the reported incidents. We honestly don't know why that's happening. We're speculating that it had something to do with 9/11 and the closing down of a lot of sites and the increased visibility of security during that time. But the trend from really the beginning of the internet era to today has been steadily upward and upward at an increasing rate. In the last year, 2 years, in the last 2 years, there have been 104 million compromises of individual records, according to one source, and this is a very significant happening. This is not fun and game stuff. It goes to the fundamental privacy of our citizens and the integrity of their financial transactions with government and with business. So this is why this is our highest priority. What we want to do, and what we're asking for your support to do, is to implement true enterprise security that crosses agency boundaries and pays little regard to the bureaucratic niceties that exist within the executive branch. We want to implement a process of weekly security assessments so that it isn't after the fact that we look for somebody to blame when there's a problem, but we rather prevent intrusion, we prevent compromises of information. When there is an intrusion, on a 24/7 basis, we want to find out about it and respond to it quickly and immediately, not days later when much of the damage has been done. We want to put active security controls on all computers, and this is more than buying 35,000 copies of Norton antivirus. It takes an awful lot of software threats, as well as the option that you see occasionally of walking off with a laptop or a thumb drive or something like that that has private data on it that's unencrypted and available to whoever happens to use the machine. This has to be done enterprise-wide because the potential for damaging the enterprise, all of state government, exists any time you have an unprotected access to it. We want to test our disaster recovery strategies. We have been mercifully lucky in not having a major business interruption. Floods and things like that have been something we've been able to survive. But luck is not a good long-term strategy for protecting the enterprise that is government. So we'll be looking at taking some positive steps to try to increase both our capacity for recovery as a state and the individual systems that run on our state networks. And finally, and equally importantly, we have to do a much better job of increasing security awareness with our employees and our customers so that they understand what the potential risks are and how to avoid them and how to mitigate them when they actually take place. What we're going to be asking for out of this money is 24 staff of IT security professionals. These are people who are specialized in various aspects of information security, disaster recovery, what they call forensic computing to identify when problems happen, where they might be, and how to deal with them. And the rest of it is in enterprise software that will run on our network to detect weaknesses, remedy them, and also prevent intrusion and damage coming from anywhere within the network. Because as long as the network is vulnerable any place, whether it's in a college campus or a state agency or coming in through one of our websites in the public, the entire network is jeopardized. So this is the basis for the primary thrust of what we're doing. Much of this money is going to be spent on behalf of all the agencies, and it will go to start to supplement what is done and, more importantly, what is not done within the agencies right now. So that will be how the funding is going to be distributed. What we want as outcomes from this, the deliverables, if you will, the value you'll get for that, is that we're going to move towards having no weak links in the state system. It is one of the strengths of modern technology and also one of its weaknesses that we're highly networked. And we will have people who are able to exchange information and get on the same network. We have to make sure they're all trusted partners in this process. We'll have up-to-the-minute security threat information, the ability to respond to business interruptions, which is the term of art around a disaster, whether it's man-made or natural. And by centralizing the purchasing of these network tools, rather than having individual agencies purchasing them, not only will we have consistent protection, but we'll have more economical protection across the state. And in the process, we'll be protecting the data and the systems that the government runs on and relies on. Our goal, I'm sorry, that okay. was the security initiative.
Okay, can I just, I know this is going in the opposite direction which we've gone, but does anyone periodically look at does everything have to be networked together? I mean, like, do the colleges really have to be networked into the revenue system or whatever?
Madam Chair, it's the most economical way to provide high capacity and high reliability communications across the state, regardless of what entity. there are security firewalls and zoning that set off Minsku from the University of Minnesota, from K-12 and from us. But all of those technologies, if they're left static, can be compromised. But connecting us all is one of the best way to serve the state in terms of information sharing and procedural sharing and so on. If we want to go back to an isolated environment, it creates a lot of opportunities, but then each one of those is individually still vulnerable.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a few questions. How many people do you have in the database when you're talking about the records and trying to, I mean, or just as far as millions of data? Can you just give me an estimate of that?
Madam Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Christopher Buzzi, and I'm the Chief Information Security Officer for the state of Minnesota. And I can respond to that question not only from my security perspective, but prior to taking this assignment, I spent 19 years working with Legislative Auditor Jim Nobles. And so I have a lot of experience looking at the state agencies kind of at the detailed grassroots level. But if you look across the boundaries of state government and all the different services we provide from a transportation perspective, from education, from health care, and even when you think about taxing, basically what you find is that everybody in this room today has data stored about them in a variety of different government systems. So you as a legislator, you have information stored in the revenue system in the form of your tax returns. Every time you're paid by a private sector employer, the amount that you're paid is stored over in the Department of Employment and Economic Security. That's used for purposes of determining whether unemployment compensation can be paid in the future. There's even a lot of data that people don't realize. So, for example, when you go to the doctor and have medical procedures done, even though you may not be a recipient of government-based health care, your data is still collected by the government, and it's stored by the government because your data is used to determine the rates that government will provide. So if you think across the boundaries of state government, all the different things that we do and all the different ways we provide services, there's a lot of different ways that we store a lot of very sensitive data across our organization.
Thank you. And could you tell me how many people you currently have protecting all of this data and information?
Madam Chair, committee members, I don't have an exact number. We have a variety of different security professionals that are scattered throughout state government right now. Most of the big agencies have at least one dedicated person. Some of the agencies have more than one dedicated person. Centrally, within the Office of Enterprise Technology, with the $1.9 million of startup funding that the policymakers provided for us last session, we have approximately 12 on our staff right now that we've hired to get the program up and running.
Thank you. And then one final question, Madam Chair. Thank you. You had just mentioned that it's better to not have the individual agencies purchasing. I'm just wondering about from the Minsku side. I know that they're looking at trying to upgrade some technology, and I'm wondering how that fits in with what OET is doing for the upgrade of technology.
Madam Chair, committee members, we're partnering with Minsku, with all state agencies. We're even partnering with the legislative agencies and the constitutional officers and even some local governments. One of the things that's become crystal clear in my first 6 months here working in the Office of Enterprise Technology is the security incidents that we have happened to us every day are not isolated to the executive branch of government. So when we determine what the solutions need to be, what is it that we really need to do to make ourselves more secure, we have to think across all of the different boundaries, the local governments, the state agencies, the constitutional officers. So what we've done to provide those answers is we've put together a steering committee, and I call it the Information Security Council, but that's the first thing that we did when after hiring me as the state's Chief Information Security Officer. And what this body is supposed to be doing is helping us collectively decide, not just as OET, as a policy office, but collectively for government as a whole, what are the things that we absolutely need to be doing? That's the most important question, is what we should be doing. Then, once we ask what is it we should be doing, then we focus on the other two dimensions that are critically important as well. How are we going to do it? what are the tool sets that we need to put in place in order to make it happen once for all of government? And then what are the personnel needs to actually manage all these different security workflows and processes that we need to build to make our government more secure? So the answer is yes. We are partnering with MinSQ, and I believe that if we get the process in place and we work together and we get the funding, my vision is that we will have a 24/7 365 operation. We will be able to monitor from one central location everything that's going on throughout state government. So we'll have all tools that we'll plug in. We'll use a common set of tools. We'll plug in to a common approach. We'll have common workflows. And organizations like MinSQ, they will still need to have security professionals in their organization. That's really important that we don't take away the local element. But they'll be monitoring their dashboard with the common set of tools and making their local decisions. But yes, when their folks go home at night, they're typically 9-to-5 operations. We're going to have people centrally, so when something happens in the middle of the night, we're going to be on the horn right away calling their lead professionals and possibly enabling cross-agency emergency response teams that can respond to issues. So that's the vision of how this is going to work together and why it's so important to have everybody involved.
Thank you. Okay. Senator LaFarge.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for any one of the witnesses. If we go back a couple slides, we saw there was a request for, I think it was about 24 FTE. And I'm just curious, perhaps I missed it, are these temporary or are they permanent, and are they considered consultants or employees? I'd just like just a little bit more detail about the additional FTE, if you could.
Madam Chair, committee members, when we embarked on this process, working through the Information Security Council defining what we need to do, we put together a master plan of what are all the things that we need to put together centrally to put together a security program as a whole. And collectively, we believe that there's about 20 functional areas that we need to do for all of state government, ranging from everything from on the planning and preventive control side, having dedicated professionals that will be involved in all system development projects to make sure that controls are built in up front in the computer system. So those things that happen on the planning side. Two, when we look at the active threat and vulnerability management, people that are actually responsible for overseeing the sophisticated tools that we'll be using to scan every government system at least weekly, so when a bad thing happens, that we can actually respond to those type of events. So the 24 FTEs that you see on the screen represent all of the people that we think we need to have in place to fulfill those 20 functional areas that we believe that we need to perform as a community.
Madam Chair and Representative, in answer to the first part of your question, these are all permanent staff, all technology professionals.
But if at some point we decide that we're more interested in outsourcing some of these operations to, you know, suppose a large Minnesota corporation or something like that, how will the planning that we're doing in this, how will what we're doing in this appropriation be affected by that?
Madam Chair, committee members, the way we're approaching this right now is for every one of the areas that we're sitting down and we're deciding what it is we need to do. I'll give you a specific example. Right now, with the $1.9 million, we're working on one of our highest risk areas, that's vulnerability and threat management. And the key thing that we're doing is, as the community, we're deciding what is it that we need to do. And after we decide what it is we need to do, then the decision is that how are we going to do it? Are we going to provide that service internally as government? Are we going to provide the service internally as government with partnering up with vendors that currently assist with these areas? There are opportunities in some cases, as you well know, to simply outsource the service altogether, and we could be the manager of that particular service. At this point in time, we are not planning to outsource particular aspects of our security architecture. Our plan currently is to do the work ourselves. However, part of the process, when we define specifically what are the workflows, what needs to be done, we could potentially take those workflows, what needs to be done, and at some point later in the future, it would be possible, if that's the way the government
chooses to operate to have some vendors come in and provide that service for us. But the most important thing now is deciding what needs to be done.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just very briefly, as long as we've got computer security people up here, some very earnest and respected people have contacted me sort of offline in the past about an alleged computer security threat we're all overlooking in America, and it's electromagnetic pulse. And if you could just briefly, do you consider that to be a security risk at all? I can't find a lot of data on it. Thank you.
Madam Chair, committee members, it certainly is. It's a threat that we face. I've read articles and stories in the past where if you don't have a shielded data center, what can happen is somebody can come with a highly powerful electromagnetic device and they can point that thing at your data center and they can destroy parts or all of the data that resides on your computer systems. It's certainly a threat in relation to all of the other threats that I see for state government as the state's chief information security officer. I don't believe that is one of the issues that we should be considering one of our critical areas that we need to focus on first. But you're right, it is a threat. It's one of many threats that we face in this area.
Okay.
Madam Chair and members, the second initiative in terms of priority for us is IT consolidation. This is around the infrastructure of state government and the utility services that we provide. Right now we live in an environment that is balkanized, it is broken up, it is decentralized, sometimes for good reason, many times just because that's the way the organizations grew up. We have a lot of duplication of services, we have a lot of resources that are required but not fully utilized, we have issues of continuity in those services that are provided, we have customer needs that cannot be met without a substantial individual investment, and it makes more sense to do that centrally. And we have a lot of systems that are, quite frankly, old and in danger of collapse. Gartner tells us that most major business-critical systems are replaced or substantially renewed on at least a seven-year basis, if not more frequently, in the private sector. It is not uncommon to have major mission-critical applications in state government that are 25 and 30 years old. I was formerly Deputy Commissioner of Revenue, and at that point we replaced an individual income tax system and a sales tax system that were over 30 years old based on technologies that were unsupportable. That still happens in many places within state government. To give you an idea of that, of the $600 million approximately that is IT spend in state government, and that includes both direct IT costs and indirect costs of supporting that IT, we have 32 raised floor data centers. This is a substantial cost for the state of Minnesota. There's another probably 40 that we call data centers that are really nothing more than glorified closets with some computers in them. We have 267 email servers. That means 267 different email systems within the executive branch of state government. This is nonsense. Not only do we have a lot of money spent on hardware that's being run at less than capacity, we have a lot of duplicated staff that don't add relative value compared to the cost of that staff around email management. Consolidating of many of these kinds of services, like managing data centers, email scheduling packages, security is another area where consolidation benefits us, accomplishes two things. We can provide a higher degree of service, a higher relative stable, secure environment, reduce the operating costs over time, and also address what is one of the lurking problems for us that we've talked about in front of this committee before, which is the upcoming retirement of a lot of our staff. Our staff is aging. Over the next few years, a substantial proportion of them are going to be eligible for retirement, and we simply can't replace them. There isn't a labor pool, and we don't have the money to replace them on a one-for-one basis. So we have to find some way of using that human resource more effectively while at the same time using hardware more efficiently to provide the same level of service to agencies and to their agency customers. We're also in a situation where many agencies are struggling to get into e-government to deliver services electronically. We know that this is the future. This is what citizens want. We know that constraining our ability to deliver services to a Monday through Friday 8 to 4:30 environment is no longer acceptable. but we don't have the staff to support systems on a 7x24 basis across state government. If we consolidate resources, we can do that, because now you have people doing more work more efficiently in an environment that is more controlled and uniform, and to try to deliver those services and provide support if there's a challenge to them, a service outage or something like that. There are a lot of services that we can provide. There's a list of them here. I'm not going to bore you by reading it or trying to explain all of it. But the point is, these infrastructure services of network and data management, of data center operations, of things like email and scheduling package, basically all of the transactional base for the state, can very efficiently be consolidated. And if there is an ROI in any of these initiatives that can be felt financially, it isn't this consolidation initiative, because over time, as we retire old hardware and replace it with new hardware, as we move staff around to operate more efficiently with them, there will be savings generated from this initiative. The action steps we've identified is, first of all, do an assessment of all systems. You'll hear me talk in a couple minutes about the status of our knowledge of what's involved in state IT. We have to do an assessment of all of those systems, and we're doing that through our portfolio management process. But trying to identify both the technical condition and business value of the thousands of systems that are in state government. We have to identify opportunities for reengineering as well as opportunities for retiring duplicative systems. That's a major analytical task in itself. We have to create some service level agreements for the enterprise to ensure that the act of consolidation doesn't result in a any kind of reduction in service level or service quality either to the agencies or to their customers. We have to come up with a more sophisticated model for how we do our funding. Right now, of the budget in the Office of Enterprise Technology, about 95% of it is on a direct fee for service. But that doesn't accommodate all the services that are provided, and so you have a situation where some agencies, by design or accidentally, end up subsidizing other ones. And the actual cost of many of the services is not reflected in the rates. At the same token, while there are opportunities for new services, if those costs are spread fairly across agencies, in the absence of some revenue stream, we can't offer them. So we think by consolidating and bundling and streamlining operations, we can produce a higher quality of service at competitive prices. The funding distribution of this, 13 staff in fiscal 08, additional staff up to a total of 21 in fiscal 09. There's a very large amount of money in here for buying service management tools. These are enterprise-level tools that we do not presently have to manage performance and cost across the whole array of IT services, as well as some professional staff to deal with those. We also have conversion costs, much of which will be one-time expenses for professional and technical services, because frankly, we've never done this before. In a major migration like this of moving these data centers and applications to a new array of servers is something that we have to do with a great deal of care. We want to bring in expertise from people that have done it. We've had extensive conversations with major Minnesota corporations like 3M and Target and Best Buy, how they've managed their consolidation. We've also looked to many other states that have managed consolidations and done it successfully, and some organizations that haven't been quite so successful, to find out what works and what doesn't in doing that, because it is very, very critical that we do it right. The outcomes of this are to maximize the value of our IT spend. Part of this is cost containment, so we deliver good value going forward without an additional cost. A lot of it is to cut costs through these efficiencies and to deal with our future brain drain that we know is coming, and in the process to create the secure and reliable computing environment for the state.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Lally, one quick question is, do you have an approximate amount that would be saved by consolidating these services?
Madam Representative Bigham, no, we don't. Part of what we have to do in this planning process is to identify where the opportunities of consolidation. It's not just going to be, let's throw everything together. There has to be some elaborate staging. We have six or seven agencies that have very well-managed data centers. We'll start with the ones that don't fit into that. Same with a lot of the services. We'll find things where there's a quick turnaround and a high likelihood of success while we work on developing detailed plans for the remainder. The Drive to Excellence identified some significant savings. We think those savings were perhaps overstated in terms of how quickly they could materialize because the amount of work that has to be done is very significant. And that's what a lot of this is to go for, to give us the tools and the analytical capabilities to identify those.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Lally, do you have would there be a time when you could report back to us on what that ROI might be or a timeline for having those numbers?
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, our intention is to report to you regularly on our progress on these initiatives. We won't have a cost estimate until we spend some of this money on the support that we're going to get externally to help us identify those opportunities. We know it's going to be significant. Is it going to be $10 million or $50 million? I can't tell you that. I just don't know.
I guess I'm a little bit confused then because, so the amount, it's $11 million, something like that, over the biennium, but you don't, I guess what I'm not clear is what you know and what you don't know about how much it's going to cost and what you're going to be able to do for that money and why we're doing the full chunk of money up front if we're not to the point of knowing what activities you're going to be undertaking.
Madam Chairman, Representative Winkler, we know from the experience of others what kind of savings they've realized. They've realized substantial savings both in the public and private sector from the same set of initiatives that we're proposing for the state of Minnesota. So the magnitude of it is right now still in question because we don't have enough information to know. The direction of it is not a question for us.
I guess I'm confused. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm confused. But the cost is known. And maybe I didn't hear something right. The cost is known, and the activities you have sort of outlined, but maybe not to great enough detail to know what the results are going to be, or what's this, you know, I'm supportive of what you're doing. I think it makes sense. I just want to understand how you know the cost, but still have to undergo the final planning.
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, we know many of the costs. The ones we've been able to identify are included in this. Some of them are capacity issues. The final costs of consolidation are going to come as we retire technologies going forward. So there'll be a normal cycle of investment, or reinvestment, and retirement that normally will be covered under our revolving fund rate structure, the operational cost of that. But we're still going to need some money to help us with the planning and the detailed management of the migration process. So much of what you see in here, the $3.9 million in fiscal 08 and the $1.3 in fiscal 09, is around those kinds of purchase services to help us identify and plan for that detailed migration. The actual hardware costs that we're talking about are relatively small. The software costs to manage the enterprise applications are a significant increase for us because it is new. And frankly, putting it on the rate structure against all agencies when it's going to be going after specific systems and specific data centers seemed inequitable in our estimation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question involves around kind of duplication of service or what, for example, a constituent called me recently and said she was a child care provider and that she had, and there were several child care providers within her area of her city. If she has a sub, she has to put in for a background check on a sub. If that same sub goes to her next door neighbor who's another child care provider, they have to put in for a background check on that sub. Every child care provider that sub goes to, there needs to be a new background check on that sub. So the question was, why can't we do one background check with DHS rather than duplicate it? How can we take care of that kind of a fix, or how can we respond to our constituents on those kind of questions?
Madam Chair, Representative, what you are seeing is the effect of compartmentalized distributed systems across state government that don't talk to each other. This isn't going to address that specifically. This is talking about the infrastructure. When you get into reengineering and modernizing and linking systems, that's how you can produce the kind of sea change that we have to have where we share information and are able to reduce the duplication. And I can relate to that. My son is in law enforcement, training to be a police officer. He is right now working security. He's had to have 5 separate security checks in the last 2 years with different agencies because they have no way of exchanging information or relating one to the other. That requires a change in the business process in the individual agency and reengineering to allow linking of those business processes with common applications, which does get us something into the next initiative here. But that's more than just technology. That's also business process.
Okay. Thank you,
Madam Chair. And I cheated and looked ahead a little bit, and if I got ahead of the proposal or the outline, I apologize. But as long as we're on to some of the, you know, the cost and the structures and the savings, one of the things I'm concerned about, we actually came up in public safety finance the other day, is about when you do see savings, what happens to it? And, you know, in government, if you save money on your budget at the end of the year, we come in and we snatch it away from you and toss it back into the amoeba that's a general fund, and it gets spent on who knows what. Probably something good, but it gets spent. One of the things, and, you know, maybe this is more for us as a committee to come up with, is when we do see these savings, how do we capture that savings so that when there's an increase in technology, when there's consolidation, so that they don't have to keep coming back and asking for a set amount of money each time. It's almost a reward, you know, there's disincentive for saving the state some money because we snatch it back, but a separate account, a separate silo, an investment fund, whatever it may be. But to set this aside so that when those technology improvements come up and somebody's already got a bill out there, I'll be happy to sign on. But it's for this purpose in particular, I think it's really important. It's something we're just not doing.
Some of it is done because there is a revolving fund for IT operations. There's also a proposal for specifically the technology to not cancel them somewhere in the governor's budget. But, you know,
Madam Chair, Representative Zellers, you're absolutely right. Going forward to make this transition and move government operations from the brick and mortar operations of the 20th century to digital government of the 21st century, major investments would have to be made in technology, both at the enterprise level as well as at agency level, to modernize the systems that Representative Ward was talking about, and the business process reengineering that is needed, and what Representative Winkler was talking about. To make this transition, major investments would have to be made. So such a mechanism would indeed be helpful, because we need to find a way to continuously invest in technology rather than every 2 years and go through that cycle, because technology moves fast and the business processes keep changing. So you're absolutely on the mark with that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the presenters, and maybe that council is a good place to start. In the interim, between our budgetary cycles, we lay down some groundwork, let you guys come up with specifics, but we lay down some of the guidelines, so if you see a savings, you don't have to come back to us, ask permission to spend some of those savings. If it's on strictly on technology updates, maybe that's a good place to start, Madam Chair, and maybe we can help initiate that in our committee here.
Mm-hmm. Representative Bingham? Madam Chair, I believe this is stemming from when Representative Zellers opened or put some salt in a wound on the post board in state government finance. They have a proposal to buy some technology, and, you know, the diligent representative that Mr. Zellers is asked, well, what happened? You know, we gave you, or you received money to purchase computers, and they said, we did, but then technology was improved and you took it away. So this is one of those things I agree with Representative Zellers in this, is that if we can make this more efficient, I mean, it's going to be a cost savings anyways, but I think it's more about government efficiency in general. So maybe you're right, we should work in the interim on some sort of guidelines that we can propose in.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I see. I think it's 69 FTE that you're looking at in these different proposals. I'm just wondering about the personnel level as far as different skill level, background level. You have said there's a certain need and a certain amount of need in each of the areas. I'm just curious about what you'll be looking for as differences between the different personnel.
Madam Chair, Representative Poppe, there's a variety of staff, types of staff in our various proposals. The majority of them are technical specialists, high-level people in areas like information security and data center management and so on. We also have systems architects to help us design the business and information and technology architects. We have a number of project managers that are identified in here to help us do a better job of overseeing the projects in IT projects in state government. We have fiscal analysts to help us look at, frankly, in light of the conversation we just had, one of the problems we have is identifying costs and identifying the deliverables and measuring all of that. We're trying to invest in some analytical staff to do that rather than just people that collect information. There is some additional support staff around traditional kind of data center and computer services, and then a couple people that work in the policy and portfolio management area that I'm responsible for as well. And that's scattered all across these four of these five initiatives. One has no staff.
Thank you. Okay. You have ready to go on? Okay.
Madam Chair and members, our third initiative is the Enterprise E-Licensing System Initiative. Right now, there are many opportunities for consolidating activities and doing them on a common foundation, common architecture. E-licensing attempts to do that. This is an application that we would be developing on behalf of multiple agencies. It would be a foundation for other licenses to be issued electronically. And I think it's important to know this is not a one-size-fits-all solution for licensing processes. It will not be the same to become a hairdresser as it will be to be licensed as a physician. What this will do is create the underlying technology that will enable the issuance and renewal of licenses to support the back office activities, which is a substantial part of state government. We think through this process we can both help people who are trying to be licensed in professions or starting up businesses to do it with greater efficiency than we have right now, as well as helping business growth and doing a better job of protecting the information that right now is collected in a variety of methods and often managed and manipulated multiple times before it reaches its final destination. And it will be a resource-sharing initiative. To give you an idea of the magnitude of this, right now over 1 million licensing transactions are handled every year. If you're starting up a business, you may have to go to anywhere between 3 and 13 separate agencies or boards or bodies to get all of your professional licenses and registrations in place. This has been something. I was involved in an activity in 1982 that was looking at this. This is not a new problem. We just haven't had the common technologies in the past to try to address this. There are over 500 different kind of licenses that are issued in the state of Minnesota for business and occupational purposes. It's a philosophical issue if we need that many, but it's a practical problem that they are in existence under the law, and we have to find a more efficient way of dealing with them. These 800 or 500 licenses are involved with 60 independent licensing systems, and we have 800 people working on the manual processes associated with licensing. It's a significant portion of the state's workforce. The example that's given here was of 11 licenses to start a restaurant. One of the things we can do if we use technology to enable a new approach to this is to help guide prospective owners or licensees through a process that is comprehensive rather than wait till they make a mistake and then catch them and go after them. And this is, for my revenue days, is an important part of compliance, which is helping people understand their obligations ahead of time. What we want to do is really a twofold activity here. The first is to create the foundation, the fundamental architecture to support e-licensing for all state agencies. This includes and is an absolutely essential security measure, identification management. This is, who are you, what are you authorized to do, how do we know it's you when you sign into a system so that somebody else can't come in and use your name to get a license or to perform other kinds of mischief on it. We want to create a central portal for people to come in and do their licensing rather than have to try to ferret out where in state government they have to go, what agencies, what websites if it's electronically, what mailing addresses or help desks if it's not electronically, and then create a process that will automatically renew or notify people of the need to renew those licenses. Then we'll build on that foundation with initiatives for five separate agencies, the Barber and Cosmetology Examiners Board, the EMS Board, Post Board, Labor and Industry Construction Codes, and Human Services and Family Services basis. I think there are a total of seven license types involved in this. This will not be all, but this is what's being done with this initiative to prove the concept and develop it and lay that foundation for future development. The money in here is three people to head the architectural and design and manage the project on behalf of the state. The balance of it is hardware for the portal and the identification management system, and then contract services to actually develop the licensing modules for those five agencies. Future development of new licensing types that will go on this system would have to be funded individually as time permits, but rather than take on the universe, we're trying to start with a small, manageable project, do it well, and lay that foundation for future development. The outcomes from that are the service improvements, increased ease of doing business in Minnesota, doing a better job of tracking who's eligible for what licenses and not leave it up to chance that we actually get the right kind of coverage we need, and preserving the security of the information that goes into those systems.
And for somehow we're absolutely sure that we have to contract out the services to develop the system? That it doesn't, when you're going to develop all of these licensing systems one after another, it doesn't pay to have our own group doing that?
Madam Chair, if we had assurance of what was coming next, then we could go out and hire people to do that kind of development activity. But as you're well aware, often the legislature funds an initiative and then doesn't fund the continuing costs for doing that. We don't have a body of developers that are available to do this sort of activity on a continuous basis right now.
But you're talking about this e-licensing and you're talking about a whole set of how many current, some number of the current numbers of licenses that we have? It's a whole lot of them. Isn't that a certain amount of guaranteed work to be done?
And Madam Chair, I don't know what guarantees there are of future legislative funding.
I assume that all of these contracts, and when you contract the services out, somebody's making a profit on that.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, if I may add,
pick up that profit.
Madam Chair, if I may add, one is we don't have competency today on our bench to be able to deliver this product, number one. Number two, this will be really the prototype because we've got literally hundreds of licenses. We are talking about five major licenses that we can deploy the infrastructure across for the enterprise and deliver these five solutions. I think there will be an opportunity, depending upon the success of it and how we are deploying them, that in future we could potentially take that capability and build upon it. If you want to go into more details, I can certainly have Helene Milka join us as well to weigh in on that conversation further. She's heading our Enterprise Electronic Government of Services, but your point is absolutely well taken. That could at some point in time we have our own staff do that? The answer is yes. Are we positioned to do that and build that reservoir of talent? My suggestion would be that we do this initiative, become competent at it, and while we're doing it, investigate the possibility of building a staff to do it internally.
Well, every time we contract out to do something, what we're doing is we're paying a certain amount of money to build somebody else's resume.
Madam Chair, the challenge is that the technologies are changing so fast that we as a state can never house all the talent we need internally. Private sector as well as other states depend upon private sector participation and vendor participation to deliver the right solutions.
at this early stage of developing this e-licensing solution, I believe the best way to do that is in partnership with the private sector and become proficient at ourselves as we deploy those solutions going forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The two goals that I see served here would be, one would be improved customer service, and the second would be cost savings for the state by making this more efficient. I would hope, and I hope you can tell me, if you have customer service surveys as part of this e-licensing initiative, because that's really the only, you know, surveys, as far as I know anyway, are really the only good way of measuring service quality. And that's really what this is a service business. We've talked about this. Mm-hmm. But we didn't talk about it with respect to e-licensing. And the other issue I have is that the primary way that you're probably saving money for agencies would be through the elimination of work. I know that in some instances you can have, you can repurpose certain FTEs to be doing other more sort of mission-critical type work. But I would be interested, as we look at some of these things that you're doing, to hear about how you're going to know that your service is improving and what the agency's plans are for employees, so that we're not moving into a centralized and sort of outsourced IT agency and then leaving layoffs in other departments. I know that they can use people, but sort of I'd like to hear how that will play out in those various agencies.
I'm sure Representative Winkler, part of the process that we have to go through is a business redesign process. Our intention is not to centralize all licensing in OET. It is to provide a central capacity to support the business process in multiple agencies. A lot of the people right now are doing manual processes supported by technology. Our goal is to replace the unnecessary non-value-adding labor with enabling technology, but it's absolutely critical that the agencies themselves revisit their business processes to take advantage of the technology. That's one of the reasons why this isn't as simple as creating a website with a licensing module on it. You have to tie it to those back office business processes. And at that point, I think we're going to find another situation, as we did with consolidation, where we're going to see diminishing of the workforce through natural attrition at the same time the technologies will be requiring a smaller workforce. So there will be certainly some adjustments and some moving around, but we're trying to create a generation of knowledge workers that utilize systems more efficiently rather than people that push paper around.
Madam Chair, exactly what I understand to be the purpose here. And I have some business experience in actually doing those exact things, but often there is such a buildup of work for example, county governments have to move records to an electronic format that they could employ many more people than they have, and they repurpose them. What I guess I'm interested in is, if we're focused on the technology in this committee, and Department of Health or something is looking at its budget at the health finance committee, we don't really hear about how business processes changed in those committees. So it would, unless we're on those committees. So it's helpful, at least to me, it would be, I think, helpful in making decisions to know how business process might be affected by this in the various types of agencies. And the other issue was customer service. I would like to hear how you're going to know you're doing a better job.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Colleen Melka. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for E-Government Services at the Office of Enterprise Technology. In response to your question, Representative Winkler, two questions. For the five agencies who are first in line to have their licenses automated, we've done extensive business process analysis with them, and they have realized some streamlining opportunities. So we would plan to do that with each of the licenses, with assistance from the business people in each of those agencies. On the customer service side, I have just signed an agreement, I guess, internally with one of the people who has an extensive amount of experience doing marketing within OET, and he is interested in working on a customer satisfaction survey, and licensing would be a big piece of that. But it's the external e-gov services that the state offers that we would be focusing on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just would like to be clear that that's one of the metrics I think would be useful for the committee in addition to just dollars.
Okay. Mm-hmm. If you want to be here, we can bring in our chair. But, whatever. Okay.
All in danger.
Go on.
Madam Chair and members, the fourth initiative is Enterprise Information Management, and this is the initiative that addresses the bulk, at least in terms of verbiage, of the statutory responsibilities of the Office of Enterprise Technology. We do, as part of our oversight responsibility, we do planning, we do policy development, we do portfolio management, we do project oversight, we are involved in development of the state's enterprise information architecture, and we do all that with a staff of about five people. At one time we had about 12 folks doing it. Successive generations of budgets that didn't cover inflation or cost increases or actual reductions have reduced that workforce so that we now cannot do an acceptable job. What we're asking for here is some additional staff to help us identify business opportunities, track what is happening with our IT investments, build a more comprehensive portfolio of IT assets, both systems and equipment and staff, basically to help us understand what's going on in state government technology, because right now we simply don't have the capacity to do that. We know through this process that we can help agencies look for opportunities to partner with other agencies or even with other levels of government or the private sector to deliver services more efficiently. We think this is where we're going to find the opportunities for business process redesign, because it's very difficult to look at an organization from within and see those opportunities. So we're asking here primarily for staff to do that kind of analytical work and tracking of projects. Minnesota generally has had a history of well-operated projects. That has been in spite of the lack of oversight, but it's not a strategy that we would recommend. If you track what's happened to our friends in Wisconsin with several of their major systems in the last few years, you get some sense for what can happen if you don't control the scope and scale and governance of a major IT project. What we're going to try to do is to take the information that we have now, which is right now limited to about 700 mission-critical systems at a very high level, and start gathering more information and actually doing something with it, not just collecting it and putting it in a database to generate reports. We want to aggressively advance the idea of standards and architecture for the state and put that into place, and look at doing, in partnership with other organizations, a better job of reviewing what has happened in the state to see. For example, we're working now actively with MinSCU and their master's program in IT to try to put into place a post-implementation audit process. We've never done that in the state. To look at when a project is done and everybody wipes their brows and says, and moves on, we're going to go back and find out what did we learn, what went well, what didn't, what can we generalize from that knowledge. We can't do that with our own staff. We don't have enough people to do that. But we can do it in partnership with others and produces really some effective synergies, we think.
Representative Bell.
To that point, Madam Chair, and maybe I don't remember what the Wisconsin example was. I apologize if that was what one of our other overviews or one of our committees. But for at least for two of us here at the table, could you give us an idea what Wisconsin, what they had happen, and how we're going to kind of, I mean, are we out there looking at everybody else's mistakes to make sure, I trust that you guys are, but if there was an example that you gave in Wisconsin, please
in the last year, three out. Major systems, multi-million dollar systems, the tax system, the employment security system, and a voting system have all been canceled or just trashed because they didn't make successful progress. Now, I'm not judging why. Usually a major system failure has many causes. It's not a failure of technology or a failure of governance. It's usually elements of all of these things. But the fact remains it's I think, in excess of $100 million wasted on major systems that, because of lack of oversight and lack of control in the project and in its operation. This is something that any of the literature around enterprise project management will tell you is absolutely essential that we do. We have less than 0.5% of our annual budget spent on overseeing $600 million worth of systems operations. I would suggest if you had that kind of oversight on your investments, you'd probably be concerned. So what we're trying to do is to rebuild that capability and extend it into the areas like business process redesign, so that we can look for opportunities to remove duplication, to improve business processes, and to deploy technologies most strategically for the greatest value.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm interested in this one line here which says that in 2006, OET reviewed 172 IT contracts valued at $62.5 million. How many of those did you approve? How many did you modify? And how many did you absolutely turn down?
Madam Chair, our goal is to have contracts for projects that work. It's not to try to kill projects. So we've consulted with agencies to change the focus to identify a stronger project charter, stronger project management, more appropriate technologies, rather than to just kill projects. So most of these projects were approved, but they weren't all approved in the format they originally came to us.
Well, what's the proportion? What do you think you... Any of them come to you perfect? Did you just check them off?
Madam Chair, in 30 years of state service, I haven't seen a lot of perfect. I've seen a lot of pretty good. There are some agencies...
Is there some people that fight against what you're trying to do? Do you get into fights with them?
Madam Chair, control mechanisms are always uncomfortable to people. And we're in a combination of both service and control. I think most of the mature agencies acknowledge the need for project oversight and contract review and work positively with us. There are many agencies that do a very good job. Most of the times when we encounter problems, they're with agencies that don't do it routinely or don't have a mature governance process within their organizational boundaries, and we try to do two things at one time. One, help the individual project and also help the process. So, for example, in the last year, we've implemented something called EPM, which is Enterprise Project Management. It's both a tracking mechanism for projects, but it's also a tool for project managers that helps them get projects right. Again, our goal is to do it right, not to undo it.
There's no story about anyone who left your office in tears?
We've had people leave our office angry. Quite that impact yet. And usually our goal has been to try to reach resolution of the issues so that they get their business needs met.
Madam Chair, if I may weigh in, we're trying to build a culture of a lot of cooperation and collaboration. So we're hoping that people will come along and do the right stuff.
So are we, but we keep getting these nasty letters from the governor. So I don't understand.
You guys did it too?
You send them to all of us. So I don't understand how we get to work this all out. Okay.
Madam Chair and members, this is the distribution of the funding for this initiative. It's rather modest by the standards of the other initiatives we've brought. It's all professional staff, architects, project managers, analysts working in the Office of Enterprise Technology. There's no outsourcing component to this or major technology component of it. The goals are that we spend less money on duplicative services. We avoid costs where we can, and in the process, we transform state government into the enterprise it has to be going forward further into the 21st century. The action steps, we want to start assessing the mission and workflows. I'm into the next initiative. With this, we want to spend some time over the next year actually understanding what's happening in our environment. We have the first information portfolio management system in state history. It is incomplete. It doesn't include information on business processes or minor systems. We've got a lot of work to do, but that's just sheer manpower involvement in that situation. Okay. The final initiative that we're advancing is a small agency technology initiative. In state government, there are haves, have-nots, and haven't a clue. And we're trying to work with a lot of small organizations that don't have the resources to even understand what their technology needs are. In many cases, they are operating, trying to do their mission with their clientele, with their constituencies, using technology that most of us wouldn't accept in our house. A lot of their resources are consumed by trying to keep this outdated technology running. It constitutes a security risk for us because in many cases, they don't have the most rudimentary kind of security on those systems. They come to us for help, and we have to say, sorry, we don't have any resources to do that. We don't have people available. Our funding mechanisms do not allow us to take money from one agency and spend it on others. So these agencies always end up on the short end of the stick, and when it comes to the budget process, most of them don't have the leverage or the constituencies individually to get the kind of support they need to revisit that. So what we're proposing to do is to have some resources available to address three different needs with those agencies. First of all is to help them, probably but not exclusively with the help of the Management Analysis Division of the Department of Administration, to look at their business plans and their customers and identify what their needs are with greater specificity going forward, looking at what they're going to be rather than what they've been in the past. Secondly, to do a systems assessment of what they need to meet those business needs. And then finally, to help them with the hardware and software investments to create a stable and functioning operation going forward. This does not provide sustaining money on an ongoing basis for those small agencies. It's to try to bring them up to 2007. After that, they have to find their own way of maintaining that initiative when they go. But one of the things we can try to do is that where there is issues of network support and so on, try to consolidate that so we can generate enough efficiencies of operation that they can redistribute the resources they have into the missions that they have been assigned by the legislature. This money is going into three categories. We're not asking for staff for this purpose. We will do this with the same staff we were asking for in the last initiative, to working with the agencies to help do this analysis and development. Some of the money is for services that's with Management Analysis Division, and the rest of it is hardware and software to try to bring them up to date on their technologies. We will be working also with the Department of Administration on their small agency support strategies, as well as with Chris Boozy and the security people on making sure they are secure in their environment when this is done. These particular agencies that are involved here, we will work with the ones that were identified first. Then with the resources that remain, we will start working our way down the list of, and it is a long list, of small agencies that need our support for the remainder of the biennium.
One of the things that we worked on a little bit earlier, or we heard about a little bit earlier, is this whole problem of the grants management in state government and the amounts that have been inappropriately managed. And one of the things that we wondered about is that maybe helping some of these places that are getting grants for with their technology to aid in the oversight would be a cost saving, even if we're giving something, would end up being cost saving in terms of the huge inefficiencies we saw in that and lack of oversight that we saw in that project. I don't know if you've looked at that.
Madam Chair, OLA report. That's not part of what we were anticipating in this initiative. It's looking at, it's assuming they know what their business and financial flow is, not that we're going to be revising that.
Okay. Well, it's something we might ask you to do, to look at that initiative, see what we're doing in terms of grant management initiative, and to look and see if we can put some standardized system in for information on grant management information that would end up saving.
Madam Chair, we'll follow up on that and get back to you. In summary, Madam Chair, members, what we're looking at is really furthering your vision of better government that put forth in the 2005 statute. And the outcome that we're really looking for is improved security, increased accountability, rigorous cost management, much stronger discipline there than we've had in the past, stronger governance structure, improved services, and greater citizen access. The task ahead of us is rather substantial and huge. When I came here on board almost 20 months ago and I looked at the statute, the agenda that you put forth before me was really pretty large. And I knew coming in that my budget was already cast in concrete a year before. So my challenge was to do several things. Number one was to merge old ITG and OT, that's done and complete. Number two was to turn around OET and put it in the context of the future, what the future services are. We have done that. My third challenge was to assemble a management team that can deliver that vision for you. We have put together the finest management team that one can, and I'm really proud of the people that have really come forth and are working in this management team We've just seen John Lally, Chris Busey, Kaleem Milka, former CIO of DNR, CIO of Revenue. Steve Stedman is our Chief Technology Officer, comes with a wonderful background. As a matter of fact,
you've ripped off all these people from those departments. What are those departments doing?
Madam Chair, that's all the collaboration. They were all partners.
Okay.
I have done a lot of exciting stuff in my life, and I'll tell you one thing. These last 19 months have been just phenomenal. I've never seen such collaboration. I've gone to my commissioner colleagues, they've participated. We have built cross-boundary collaboration where not just the executive branch, but K-12, MinSCU, representatives from University of Minnesota have participated in establishing desktop standards, server standards, and doing them rather fast in 90 days, 220 days time frame. Somebody said that we don't move so fast in government, and I'm saying, which government are you talking about? Because we do move fast in Minnesota. So we have been working extremely hard. We have put together a governance structure in place so that we can manage the investment going forward in the future and manage it well. All these initiatives are targeted at giving and building the enterprise capabilities that you've asked for, and I believe we can do it. I would now open for questions again.
Okay. Any further questions, Mr. Conan, Mr. Lally? Anybody?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think you've touched on this a couple of different times, but I just wanted to get a further clarification. You mentioned the concern that we have an aging population within our state workforce, and I'm just curious, on the 69 FTEs that you're looking to hire for 2008-2009, are you going to be hiring them from the other agencies, and then those agencies will have the cost savings because they won't have those staff members there? Or how are you handling that, and how, in particular, in the area of the IT consolidation piece, you talk about getting efficiencies, and I'm assuming that includes pulling those staff and putting those 34 staff as from the different agencies, and I'm assuming you have collaboration from the different agencies on that, or...
Madam Chair, Representative, it's quite possible because we'll open these positions to anybody to apply and buy for. And as a matter of fact, we've done that in filling some of the open positions that we did this past year with the money that we got from the legislature for a security complex. And we continue to do that. So you're absolutely right that it could potentially result in that shift. Your earlier question about the aging of the population, here's the challenge. There's about 2,400 IT staff across the executive branch, and by 2020, about 70% would be eligible for retirement. They'll be age 60. That's a huge number. Within OET, the Office of Enterprise Technology, which is a very small staff of about 300 plus right now, we are looking at by 2020, about 50% people would be leaving workforce. So we have to prepare ourselves and use the leverage of technology to manage that brain drain, and we need to move very fast with it.
Yes. Madam Chair, so just to be clear, there isn't going to necessarily be an automatic reduction in FTEs in the other state agencies to make up for the 69 in the Office of OET, Enterprise Technology.
Madam Chair and Representative, in doing our planning for the budget initiatives, we were assuming a couple things. First of all, that most of the critical staff that we want aren't currently employed within the state. We're looking for people with skills that we don't currently have. So simply transferring them or hijacking them from another agency isn't a particularly good strategy for that. In some cases, we will be attracting people, good people from other agencies, and they'll probably, because they are key people, have to backfill those jobs themselves. Now, over time, with many of these activities, we expect that, for example, in consolidation, that we will see an absorption of the existing workforce, centralization of it, so that the amount of new hires over time should be reduced as we move staff with the skills we need to support the technologies that we have. Whether that is a one-for-one transfer or there will be differences from agencies to agencies pretty much depends on our staging of these initiatives. We don't know for sure.
Okay. Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kana, I just commend you. You have such an exceptional skill with being able to pull the right people together, and that's very apparent, and also just being able to tackle what was certainly a very huge project and multiple projects that you have in front of you. I just have a couple of questions. I guess you talk a lot about the enterprise being, you know, all across the board and then the silos. I'm just wondering a little bit about the silos, wondering if how you help them to assess the risk for them moving forward and the kind of, again, I'll talk about Minsky and their $70 million request and how you're going, how you talked a little bit about, Chris talked about having a partnership. I'm just wondering, I guess, a little bit more about an overseeing kind of basis, how that works with the silos, and using that as an example.
Madam Chair, Representative Scotton, let me first thank you for your very kind words. Actually, I didn't do anything at all. As a matter of fact, it was the governor's compelling vision, the legislature's vision for putting together a wonderful statute, and the drive to excellence. Over 208 people participated in creating the transformation roadmap. So when I came in, I walked in literally into an environment which was perfect for transformation and ready for transformation. I got really lucky because some really fine people joined the team, so I'm blessed and I'm grateful for that. Coming back to your questions, I believe...
So we owe this to either Representative Prince or Representative Seifert? Checking.
Exactly. but I really appreciate that. I'm humbled by what you said. But I will let John talk about the
Madam Chair and Representative, there are significant risks to the silos. There are major risks to not making change. We know that our current environment is not sustainable going forward into the future for reasons of skills, for reasons of cost, for reasons of the increasingly antiquated systems that we have in place. If we're going to do something, it makes a great deal of sense to do it from a coordinated enterprise viewpoint rather than simply replicate the existing environment with newer technology. In the reengineering field, we talk about paving the cow paths, which is simply you bring in new hardware to do something that shouldn't be done faster. We think if we approach the business process design at trying to identify what outcomes we want, finding the appropriate technology and employing those to advance the mission, we will accomplish simultaneously doing a better job of providing service and accomplishing our mission and containing or constraining costs. There are risks. We have technologies in state government that ought not to exist anymore. We have business processes that ought not to be continued anymore. Identifying those and charting out in detail what is our transition plan, what is our convergence plan for getting to the future for the business side with the technologies they'll need then is the point of a lot of the planning that's going on within state government right now. It's not a slam dunk. It's not like picking up a computer from one room and moving it to another, and we know that. There are skills that we're deficient in managing that enterprise that we're trying to provide for in these initiatives so that when we head out to reach that future, we can do it with at least a measure of confidence and know what the risks are and have the mitigating strategies in place for them. But yes, there are risks. There's no question about that.
Before I go to Mr. Buski, Representative Ward moves adoption of the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Minutes are adopted.
Madam Chair, committee members, in response to the question, one of the things that I think has really been a very simple thing that's happened that's really helped reduce the risk is just getting people together across government to really sit down and talk about what it is that really needs to be done and agree to a common set of standards that we're going to follow so that everybody really understands what the bar is and what's acceptable and what's the real business risk of not achieving that level that we all think we need to be at. I think that's been one of the most important things. It has nothing to do with detailed technology issues. It has to do with people getting together and finally talking. And I think that's kind of the beauty of having this agency that provides this central forum that we can put those types of governance processes together. I think that's really been what I found the most striking thing since I've been here, because it involves getting together the executive branch, the legislative folks, Mintzfield, and all the different players, because we're all in this together. And unless we look at it as an approach, we're all together as one, we're never going to be able to protect the data that we, that people expect us to protect. We're never going to be able to keep the mission critical system running that absolutely need to run to keep society going. We're not going to be able to respond to regional crises and disasters. And most important of all, we're not going to be the leaders that citizens expect us to be in all of these areas. People expect government to be leaders when it comes to the issues that protect their data and provide services that are critical to people in their ongoing lives.
Okay. I think on that note, unless anyone has anything to add, we'll end. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Meeting adjourned.